Welcome to Spark Your Fire podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Now, here's your host, Jazz and David. But before that, let's listen to the quote of the week.
We do not act rightly because we are excellent. In fact, we achieve excellence by acting rightly. We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, therefore, is not an act, but a habit.
G'day everyone, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host David Shee, and along with me is our usual co-host Jazz Stana in Melbourne. Today it's worthwhile to bring on one of our past guests, Joe Natoli, who has actually gone through as a survivor from the GFC period. And we're bringing her back on to basically talk a little about whether there's any current similarities between the GFC and the current COVID-19 period. And, you know, how should people react to that during this tough time, given the fact that she's obviously gone through that tough period. So let's welcome her back. Jo, welcome back on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure, and I'm sure Jazz would also like to dig in a bit more deeper into your survival story and how people should be reacting to that in the current environment. So I guess the key question, and I guess for those of you who haven't caught up with her episode, by the way, I think it was done pretty much mid last year. Jo has been one of the investors. I think you've got, how many properties have you got up to GFC around that time?
I had a portfolio roughly in the vicinity of around $30 million in value.
Yeah, 30 mil. And then the GFC came, and unfortunately overnight you had to sell down just to basically get through the tough period, isn't it?
It was very tough. Very, very tough. Forced sales.
Sorry, from memory, Joe, the figure was post all the GFC, you netted in your pocket $60,000.
Excellent memory, yes. I walked away with $60,000, my car and my clothes.
It's one of those bad memories that's stuck in my head.
How come it's not 77777 anyway?
But I have a brain full of knowledge and experience that no one can ever take away. So
I guess, Joe, it's a bit late anyways, but we are in a situation which is not exactly GFC, but this is caused by a pandemic, which has led to real estate and the other businesses being affected. If you were to compare the property side back then and now, and I know it's hard to sort of compare because they're very different events, but if you were to compare the two, and with your experience, tell the listeners on what they can do now, probably, if it's already not too late, to play safe, and for the ones who are cashed up investors, what they should be looking for.
What people can do now, I would caution people against panicking. In the global financial crisis, we saw a lot of panic. And I'm not saying that wasn't unjustified, but there was a lot of panic and a lot of mayhem and a lot of confusion. I think this time round, what we're seeing is some really good communication from everybody concerned. All of the banks are communicating reasonably well with their customers. The government is communicating really, really well with the population. So there seems to be less panic and less hysteria in the market now than what there was back in GFC days, which is fantastic. What people can do now, it really depends on their situation, doesn't it? And what the banks can allow and can't allow. If we had a crystal ball 6 months ago and knew that this was going to happen, you know, I would have said, I would have been just paying down my debts as much as possible so that I can ride the storm. I guess the problem is that we don't really know how long this is going to go on for. The government's saying a couple of months, but who really knows? I just think that everyone just needs to keep a cool head and, yeah, not get into panic mode, because when you're in panic mode, you make decisions that may not be the best. You're making a decision from fear, from a place of fear, which doesn't necessarily lend itself to the best decisions being made. The government is providing assistance because it recognises that people need assistance, and certainly people should make themselves aware of what's available and make use of the assistance available. But they also need to balance that and have a look at what that assistance is going to cost them longer term. The banks seem quite generous and caring when they're offering rent deferment, mortgage deferment payment plans and things like that. But the customers of those banks and lending institutions really just need to sit down and do the numbers and make sure that they are not going to be any worse off as a result of taking up any offers that are made.
It's an opportunity at the same time. What's happened has happened. Nothing can be stopped. But rather look at the half glass empty, let's look at the half glass full of it's obviously going to create a lot of opportunities in the property market while it's so slow. How would you take the opportunity in this market environment?
I'm suggesting to people that I speak to that if they're financially stable and have some money put aside, that now would be a good time, and in the next few months would be a good time to have a look around for some purchasing opportunities, because I think there will be some opportunities coming up in the market for people to really consider seriously. People put their properties on the market because they need to sell, but because of the uncertainty out there that a lot of people have, they're retreating from the market. So anybody who does have the cash and can spend it, I think they're well positioned to be able to pick up some good purchases.
Do you think it's already that point where they can start negotiating the deals, or it's...
I was speaking to somebody just this morning who told me that the clearance rates for the auctions this weekend were... I mean, granted, it was Easter. However, we've seen auction rates, clearance rates go down considerably over the last few weeks. So I think now's a good time. Now's a good time to at least start having a look around at what's there. But I also think that... As the reality becomes more clear about where people are in terms of employment and business closures and things like that over the next couple of weeks, I think we will see some more opportunity if you're a contrarian or if you like to, if you're an opportunistic purchaser.
What sort of deals would you be looking at in the current market, and are you currently active in the market looking at purchasing properties?
I'm not active in the market. I've just purchased a property a week before the pandemic was announced. So I'm not looking at the moment.
Joe caught twice in the GFC.
You surely know when to time the market. That's yeah. That way. tell us a little bit more about this. Obviously there was no, you haven't had you know that COVID-19 was already on around that time. It wasn't as severe as locking down, and obviously after you purchased the property then the government announced that we need to start locking down. But were you just basically looking like business as usual beforehand? You weren't expecting it was a lockdown at that time, isn't it?
Well, I wasn't expecting it, but my purchase is more of a longer term, very, very long term play. I've actually just purchased the office that my business is located in, so I was renting it and I've purchased it, and it was just an opportunity that came up at that particular point in time, and I was in a position to jump on it, so I did. Had I not purchased that office, though, I would certainly be in the market looking for something to buy. I can just see that there's going to be some opportunity there.
So it was a commercial office that you purchased?
Yeah, it's an office suite. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, right. Okay. And was it a reason like why the seller was selling at that point in time, knowing that, we're obviously going into COVID-19 period, or just... You've been negotiating for a while.
Yeah, it had been. The vendors had flagged with me towards the end of last year that they were thinking of looking putting it on the market. Yeah.
Mm, so. Mm.
It was just an opportunity that fell in my lap, so to speak.
Yeah, right. Okay. Okay. So it wasn't consciously looking. It was just, it was basically just, you know, you've been renting this office, you had a relationship with the landlord, and, you know, you happen to know they're looking at selling. So you started that process, go, okay, well, you know, how about if I actually purchase this commercial asset instead? Whereabouts is it?
It's in Glebe. I mean, it has thrown a little bit of a spanner in the works because the finance was all set and done, and then that's kind of had to be reworked a little bit. But, I mean, that's just the way it is, isn't it? So you just deal with what gets put in front of you and you just make it work. So, but, yeah, it's in Glebe. So.
When you say that finance being and you had to rework a little bit, what do you mean by that?
Approval figures were adjusted slightly, and just a couple of the minor terms of the finance deal were varied, but nothing too major. Nothing.
Was it caused by the COVID-19 that the lender came back and essentially go, now we need XYZ more than what we already pre-approved?
That's exactly right. Yes.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yes. So essentially they got there.
So what happened was the stock market suffered a bit of a downturn suddenly, and then all of the investors who had their money in there pulled it out, and they got a little bit scared and went, oh, I think we just want to vary the terms of your loan agreement just a little bit. But that's okay.
So that definitely, you know, gives our listeners a bit of perspective to say whatever the previous approval or the conditional approval that you had, just need to be cautious in the current environment that the lenders may ask for more details. And in your scenario, it's commercial, but, you know, I would also say applies to residential as well. They're being a lot more cautious in the current environment about, you know, your industries. Are there anything that's on the horizon that could potentially change that's going to impact your serviceability or impact your job stableness, for example, that kind of thing. So, but not to say that it's impossible to get finance. It just comes down to each individual case to say, you know, are there any other assets or, you know, how long have you been in job for example, you know, and then what are the future prospects of your industry looking like,
whether
it's your repayment capability as such?
I think they're taking a much more personal look, if you know what I mean. They're looking at the individual and their own unique set of circumstances, rather than just trying to pigeonhole everybody into their little boxes. They're actually taking a closer personal look at people.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Which is what they really should be doing from day one
It's not necessarily a bad thing. But it does slow things down. It makes people a little bit more cautious. And like I said earlier, if you have the ability to move on things now, well then, it gives you that freedom to be able to do that, I guess.
Makes sense.
How do you see the commercial market changing or getting affected in this environment, Joe? Do you have much experience in the commercial space or not?
I don't have a lot of commercial properties in my portfolio at the moment, although it's something I'd love to build up. But I think commercial, it's a good question, actually. I don't know. I haven't sat down and thought about it. I think commercial in the immediate term will suffer a little bit more than what the residential will, because so many businesses are being affected by the shutdown. So many industries are being affected by this shutdown and classified as non-essential work and non-essential businesses. So I think it might take a bit of a hit for a little while.
From a
rental anyway. When I'm having a look at the rents, I think it'll be – but having said that, does that mean then the purchase price, the values come down because the income is less? So the values come down, which means, again, if you're in a position to purchase, perhaps it might not be a bad time to think about it if you can ride the waves. I think we might see a demand for smaller commercial spaces rise as businesses start to realise that, hey, a portion of their workforce can actually work from home from time to time. That would mean then that they would need less office space to accommodate that staff. Perhaps they'd move more to hot desking or share desking or whatever they want to call it. So I think we might see demand for smaller spaces in the longer term rise, because businesses are always looking to, get cost savings wherever they can. And one of their biggest expenses is the premises that they occupy.
Exactly.
So it wouldn't surprise me if we see a flood of businesses relocating to smaller premises once all this is said and done and the fallout is, you know, we're all kind of back on an even keel. It wouldn't surprise me to see businesses relocating and looking to restructure the way they accommodate their businesses.
Short-term lease, that kind of stuff, isn't it? A bit like rather than a longer tenancy leases. 5 years, that kind of
No, I think they'll just move to smaller spaces. They still want stability. Businesses always want stability. So it's not the shorter term leases. I just think it's the smaller spaces that they need, but they do still the longer term security of having, you know, it's a pain moving a business. It's a real pain. You don't want to be doing that too many times. It'll be very interesting to sit back and watch how that space behaves over the next few months to a year, I'd say.
Are you finding that the developers are have paused the deals completely, or they're just negotiating it harder, or you won't know?
I'm not involved in that space as heavily as I used to be. However, I am in touch with a couple of developers, and I have been watching quite closely what they're doing. What I'm seeing now is that the developers are just negotiating on sites and acquiring sites and sitting on them. They're spending this downtime concentrating on their designs and trying to maximise the value of their final end product. Now is very much about planning. I guess right now is a prime example of why everybody needs a buffer and not to stretch themselves to their absolute limits. And because, look, we're all being stretched to our limits now, and it's not very comfortable, is it?
Yeah, look, so I think, Jazz, you mentioned a very point earlier, which is, you know, in relation to the current environment as being a landlord, and Joe, this is probably bringing you into your forte as a property manager. How does a property manager balance expectations of landlords and tenants in the current environment, given the fact that, you know, tenants are asking for rent reduction and, you know, landlords are like, well, if I have to drop the rent, then I'm going to be in hardship. So how do you, as a middle person at the moment, be able to handle both expectations?
The whole industry is experiencing those types of requests from tenants who aren't able to fulfil their full rental obligations. Across the board, anecdotally, it's about 2 to 3% of the portfolio is what I can understand talking to my peers. But it's very, very difficult to balance those expectations of landlord and tenant. I guess the relief that's offered, I guess we've got more clarity now about, we have a framework now, given the New South Wales government's announcements yesterday, we at least have a framework that we can work with. Whereas before that came out, we didn't have anything at all. All we had was the Prime Minister saying that there was a six-month moratorium on evictions, but that kind of didn't say anything at all to us. The landlords heard one thing and the tenants heard something completely different. And that it did create quite a lot of problems and quite a lot of heated discussions between landlord and tenant, with the property manager sitting in the middle. But at least now, following yesterday's announcements from the state government, we have a framework that we can work with, which is good. The New South Wales state government yesterday announced a $440 million package that was to be split between commercial and residential sectors. And but what they did for the residential sector, the commercial sector's already been dealt with by the Prime Minister rather effectively, I think. And so I think that all of the landlords and all of the tenants in the commercial space have a really good understanding of where they're at. They have a good understanding of what's available to them and what they need to do to navigate the next few months, whereas in the residential space we didn't have that, and to a large degree we still don't, but at least we've got now. So yesterday the Premier, or the New South Wales government, announced at least some eligibility criteria that the tenants need to meet in order to be eligible for relief from the landlords. landlords were given some indications about what they would receive in turn from the government if they provided relief to the tenants. The relief that the state government is providing to landlords is only available to the landlords by way of land tax relief. So if you've only got one or two properties and you don't meet the land tax hold, the land tax threshold. Then from what I can gather, you don't even qualify for any relief if you're providing relief to the tenants. You're kind of on your own. So that is not a good thing. And the tenants are turning around and they're saying to landlords, well, you can go and put your mortgage on freeze or defer your payments. But I think a lot of the tenants don't understand that if a landlord chooses to make those applications with their bank, then the landlord's actually not getting a free ride. The landlord is paying for that plus a little bit extra down the line towards the end of their mortgage term. And I think that that's actually lost on a lot of tenants. So not only is the landlord suffering hardship now, but they're also going to be paying for it again, you know, in months or years in the future when, their interest comes up to be paid. And those mortgage months that have been waived or deferred actually get tacked on to the end of the life of their loan. So I think Scott Morrison, whilst I generally admire the way he's handled the situation with his calm, steady hand, he really made a big blunder by just coming out and saying there's a six-month moratorium on evictions and providing no detail and leaving us hanging for 2.5 weeks. He shouldn't have said there's a six-month moratorium on rent evictions without providing the detail immediately. So what we've seen is vested interest groups walking around saying, we're not paying rent. We don't have to pay rent. You can't evict us. You can't stop us. So we've been landlords and property managers as the landlord's agents have been fielding those sorts of conversations for the last 2.5 weeks, and we've not had a great ability to set out to the tenants, well, no, these are your obligations. It's all well and good for us to say, well, you still need to pay your rent. But when the Prime Minister is saying there's a six-month moratorium on evictions and no other information is forthcoming, then that's really problematic. It has caused problems.
Yeah.
But what we have now is at least we have an eligibility criteria that the tenants need to meet. So they have to display, they have to prove that their income and then it's their net income. They have to prove that their net income has fallen by 25% or more. And they have to take into account the benefits that they may be eligible for that the governments have announced, you know, job seeker, job keeper, and all those other bits and bobs. So they have to demonstrate adequately that they are in genuine bona fide need of that rent relief. And the landlords and the tenants still need to sit down and negotiate an outcome. But what was announced in the fine print yesterday was that any deferment that a landlord offers to a tenant is repayable by the tenant. So if I'm reducing a tenant's rent today by $100, then I'm not just giving that tenant $100 discount off his rent. He has to pay that $100 back in the fullness of time. So the landlord's not out of pocket and the tenant is still fulfilling the obligations of his lease agreement. And that's a good thing.
That's interesting though, Joe. But what happens if the tenant keeps racking up these bills and then decides to vacate at the end of the 6 months? Then what's going to happen at that point in time? Is landlord insurance going to cover for that?
Now more than ever, it's really important to have landlord's insurance. The landlord, and this is, and it comes, I'm not a insurance broker and I can't provide professional advice, but sure. From my discussions with insurance providers is that they're not going to cover, if you decide to just give the tenant $100 a week off, they're not going to cover that $100 that you've decided to just forfeit, because it's a forfeiture of the rent.
Right.
But the way I understand it is, if there is an agreement in place and the tenant is still required to pay the full amount of rent, then you're covered for that full amount. So it's very, very important that you structure and word any agreement that you have, that you arrive at with your tenant, very, very carefully, so it doesn't put in jeopardy any landlord's insurance policy that you might have.
Okay, so it becomes more of an agreement slash legal issue rather than deferring back to landlord insurance side of things to that extent.
You don't rely on the landlord insurance fully. You've got to word your agreement. And what I'm saying to my landlords is, we're not providing rent credit. We're not providing rent relief. We're providing a deferment on a portion of the rent, so that the rent is always fully due and payable. We're just deferring a small portion of it to be paid at a later date. So essentially what I'm doing is, I'm not varying the rent amount. I'm just varying the terms in which the tenant has to pay that rent.
Yeah. It's a bit like mortgage deferral as well. You know, you still need to pay it back, but essentially at the moment we just put it on the books, and there's agreement to say there's a time frame that you do need to pay this back.
Yes, that's right. And we still need to balance that with the needs of the tenant as well. So, you know, I'm in a situation at the moment with one particular tenant, and I've said to them, they've asked for a certain percentage of reduction in their rent, and I've said, well, they're asking for rent relief, actually. They're asking for a complete waiver of a portion of their rent, to which we've said no, but we've counter-offered, and we've basically said, well, we will give you, as an example, $150 off your rent for the next 8 weeks. However, that $150 needs to be paid back over the following 16 weeks at a rate of $90 per week. So I'm halving. Yeah, so I'm trying to stretch out as much as possible their repayments so as to not increase any burden, but at the same time balance that with the needs of my landlord, who still has a mortgage to pay, you know, and the thing is that landlords are suffering equally as much as the tenants are, but so it's difficult and tricky, and everyone is just being human and trying to look after their own backyard, which I get. I understand that perfectly. But at the end of the day, there's a contract still in place, and everybody needs to still observe the contract.
Yeah, and this is just for New South Wales, isn't it? So the other states, yeah. I'm not sure. I don't think they've been released as yet in terms of what the other state government's going to do in terms of assisting landlords and tenants and that such. But I guess from a so there's no eviction for the next 6 months is the directive from the government. But what if the tenant, and fingers crossed that no one's doing this, what if the tenant just decided to go, no, I'm not paying, you can't get me out anyway for the next 6 months, I'm not paying a single dime, what should a landlord do in this case?
The landlord has to be very sincere in their attempts to negotiate with the tenants. There is a process that has been implemented now through Fair Trading and the Tribunal, and so evictions can still take place. However, it is a process. It's a more formalised process. So first the tenants and the landlords need to try and reach an agreement themselves. If they can't, then they apply, either the tenant or the landlord can apply for mediation through Fair Trading. And if mediation doesn't work, then it will go to the tribunal for a determination. And the tribunal will look at how sincere and how earnestly the parties have tried to negotiate, and they will have a look at the bona fides of each party and make a determination from there. Evictions will still happen. If people are trying to take advantage when they're not, when their needs are not genuine, evictions will still happen. It's just going to take a lot longer, and there is going to be a more structured process in place in order to facilitate that.
Yeah.
But the message to everybody has been the same since day one: negotiate, and negotiate faithfully. you've got to be faithful in your negotiations here. If you're just trying to take advantage, well, then you've got to have the documentation to back everything up. If you're just turning around and saying, I want a 50% rent reduction, yet you've not suffered anything economically yourself, then there's no way in hell you're going to be granted that when it gets all the way to NCAP. That's just not going to happen. So you've got to be faithful in your discussions.
That's the key message, isn't it? The tenant and the landlord has to work together in this case. You know, no one, everybody's suffering, but we all have to take a bit of a hit, but we'll get through it together.
Yeah. And the message has also been clear. If you can pay rent, you need to pay your rent. It's been very, very clear. You still have an agreement that you need to honour.
Everyone should be doing the right part over here. It's not trying to take advantage of the system and it's vulnerable kind of thing. So it's just do your right thing is essentially the way to go. Otherwise, you're going to get caught one way or the other at some point.
In an ideal world, that's exactly what would happen, isn't it? That everyone will do the right thing. But
yeah, that's right, Jazz. You'll be surprised.
I want a bit of that utopia, please.
Switching gears, quick three questions. One, aliens, believe it or not?
Oh, yes, I believe.
You believe that? Another one in my camp, David doesn't. How about crypto, here to stay or a fad?
Cryptocurrency? Yeah, I have no idea. I've tried to stay away from that whole thing because it just scares me a bit, to be honest.
Right. Cool. Thanks for coming on the show once again. Appreciate your time.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.